All right. Okay. So, let's see. What if we divide you up into, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 8. What if we do 2 groups of 4? See, the problem is I want to hear what you're going to say. So this is really, I'm always traumatized at this moment. Well, that's a heavy word, but you know, it's like, ugh. So. Let's do this. I'm going to divide you into 2 groups. And what if you just kind of just do a little check-in with each other about where you are, how things are going with yourselves, you know, where you're at with the program, but with your life and, you know, just how it's fitting together. And we'll take about, you know, 10, 15 minutes for you to check in with each other. And what I'll do is I'll just pop back and forth, but I'll keep my video off so it's not too distracting. And then maybe I can, but you know, really, if I was to give you a prompt to help you stay, you know, how do you contain it so it doesn't become too huge, is what's alive for you right now with your practice? Okay. And that your practice includes this program. It includes your life, right? But so what is alive for you right now within the context of your meditation, your practice? And so let me make 2 different groups for you. And I'll just pop in and out. And so let's give you a good 15 minutes so that each person has a few minutes to talk. All right. And you can kind of talk to each other. All right. Enjoy yourselves.
I exiled myself by mistake. Sorry, Lisa. Maybe you guys are all the better for it.
No, Steve, it sounds like you're doing amazing, amazing work.
But was it nice to connect with each other?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So, all right, let me just X out of that. So it is, isn't it? These are your people. Yeah. And is everybody at peace with where they are in the program? Oh. Okay. Put it this way. Are we working to be at peace and authentic with where we are in the program? Okay. Yes. That's what we want. That's what we want. Because for several of you, if not all of you, it's like, this is your program, right? And where you are using this, where you are in your life is the point. I mean, this program is set up to be used in the life you are living. It's not this independent thing that is separate from your world. Because the premise is that I operate under is that if we cannot bring our meditation into our life, what's the point? The whole point of meditating is to use it in our life, right? So let's just bypass the anything else. Let's go direct. Let's just use it in our lives. Let's just use it in our lives and apply it where it is. And let's let go of this thought that if I don't do the curriculum the way it is, that I'm missing something. And what I want to say is, no, if you are applying whatever it is we're doing, whatever pieces of what you're doing, if you are applying it to your life what you learn from that far outweighs anything else, you know, far outweighs anything else. This is like, I mean, I think all of you know Natalie, my daughter, right? And she's had a really rough week. And she said to me yesterday, Mom, I feel like I took the class and I took the test and I passed the test. And then I got out of the class and I didn't know anything. Cause I can't remember, when do I do this? What do I do? You know, and it's like, this isn't that kind of a class. This isn't that kind of class. This is the kind of class where you apply it. And in that learning, that is what you're here to learn. Your life is what you're here to learn. It's your teacher. Am I making sense? And you know, where this came from is when I was first contemplating teaching this program, I was talking to one of my teachers, Sally Kempton, and I asked her, I said, so, you know, what advice do you have? What should we do here? And she said, well, basically, my meditation teacher can only teach what they practice. So what are you going to teach? I mean, and that's when it became so clear to me that, I mean, to teach you how to teach meditation, we could probably do in a weekend. If you were using the practices, if you were a meditator, right? We could sit down in a weekend. We could learn how do you prepare a curriculum? How do you develop a class? How do you deal with a situation class like is this? How do you explain these materials? That's all just data. It's all just data. Your strength isn't that. Anybody can do that. Your strength is you. How you have used these techniques, how you've applied it in your life, that's what you know. That's what you know. And I'll say it a million times, only teach what you know or what you're learning. Being a teacher is really good for teaching you what you want to learn. I see smiles. People know, right? So I look back now and I look back at Kriyananda's teachings and I can see, oh, okay. That's what he was working with. That's what he was working on. That's where that class came from. And it's organic that way. And that way you can never, that's not the word you want. You can never not be a good teacher. If you teach what you know, you don't even have to sit down there and do a whole bunch of anything. You sit and you go, oh, let's do this. And you can show up in a minute with somebody who needs something and you know it. You don't have to go back and review it. You know it. And this is how, and just another word of, you know, perspective as you walk more of this path and you're going to hear from me to do Hong Sa this way. You're going to hear from somebody else that it is a Hong Sa. It's so hum. You're going to, no, this isn't how you breathe that technique. That's how you breathe that technique. And what we learn, and what's really important to remember in any tradition is that there's the teacher. Okay. So this is our teacher. Teacher has 10 students. 10 students, each 10 different people. Teacher is teaching technique, Hong Sa. Student number one, like, I'm not getting this. I'm not getting this. Teacher gives that to person an instruction. Student number two, I'm not quite, when I do this, this is what I'm running into. Teacher goes, oh, okay, well then try this. Teacher gets it and on and on. Each student gets a little different instruction from the teacher. They take it out into the world. And now you've got 10 schools saying, this is the way my teacher taught it. But the teacher taught it to each student in a way that they could understand it and utilize it given their personality and their circumstances in their life. Is that, are you getting the subtext here? In other words, what you learn is what you're going to teach, and you're going to know it because you've used it. So what is going on in your life right now is what is forming and shaping you. Whether you teach formally or not, you will be a presence for people. You will be a presence. And your presence changes things and shapes things. And I don't want to talk too much out of school here, but it's like, I have been at Nat's house, right? Two little kids, husband was also working full time. And I am not a teacher for her husband, Sean, or her kids. I love them dearly. That is, you know, but I'm not their teacher. So I don't talk about any of this. And the only reason I'm even talking about any of it with Natalie is because she asked, right? So I'm not teaching. I sit with Natalie, we do our little thing, but I'm not teaching the household. But that household has shifted because I'm there. Because my calmness is there. My not being anxious is there, right? And you are that. What you are in your meditation is what you are anywhere you go, and you bring that, and that is a teaching. Every time somebody goes, oh my God, da, 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 and you go, what? Oh, no, don't worry. It hasn't even happened yet. Let's do blah, 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 blah. And then it doesn't happen, and you were calm through the whole thing. They go, wow, that Ramon, man, he's really got... He taught that I learned something from him. You know what I mean? It's like, so I don't want you to in any ever way underestimate the value of what you are doing and how it's becoming your vibration. And that vibration is a benefit to the planet. It is a benefit to the planet. Every single one of you. Gosh, I look at the screen and every single one of you, I'm gonna choke up here. Are of benefit to the planet. There are people you are serving. Friends, family. Some of you have students. Where you work. Clients. Wow. Wow. And you never even ever have to say, meditate. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, Brenda. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I was talking about with the smaller group too was that after years of, you know, thinking you have to learn a technique and do it the exact way and whatever, you wake up one day and you realize, well, I just did that and I didn't have to think about it. Like, it eventually just sort of becomes part of your reaction to the world, or, you know, you breathed your way through something and didn't realize that you were doing it, like, until after. So that has helped me to have a couple of those times, because it then, when I am trying to learn something new, I can keep that reminder that doesn't have to be perfect. Just has to, it gets in there. You always say it gets in there and does the work, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So there we are. So I am just really quite deeply, deeply touched and honored to be part of this group. Wow. And all I can do is think back to Kriyananda. You know, his last visit in the United States, he was at the temple. And he gave a teaching, and he basically said, he was passing it on. He was passing on the torch. And it was ours to carry. And I look at this group and I look at and I have a sense of the lives that you touch, right? And I'm feeling that torch. For a long time, I drew it on my whiteboard. I drew a little hill with a torch on it, right? And it's not there now, but I still feel it. And you are also carrying that torch, that flame, the Kriya flame, he calls it. And Kathleen, when we say Kriya flame in this case, really all we mean is the flame of awareness of who we are. That's what we mean. We don't mean just the Kriya techniques and all that. It's literally that place of knowing that you are finding as you walk this path. And hopefully love for yourself and compassion for others and yourselves, right? So unless there's a question, I think what I'd like to do right now is take us in from here into a Tonglen practice. And I thought what we would use today is we would use I'm not reading a lot of the news these days, but I saw that there were a bunch of buildings collapsed and floods in Germany, and lots of people lost their homes. And so I thought we would use that event as an opportunity to breathe Tonglen. Okay. And just practice it. And so just to remind you of the technique, I'll tell you a story. It's a true story. I was in a phase in my life when I was really, really, I hope I can remember all of it. I was really, really doing a lot of Tonglen for myself personally. But I happened to be traveling to LA to visit my daughter for some reason. This was many, many years ago. And we got to the car rental place and the line was literally, it was like one of those snaky, 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 snaky lines, and out and out and out and out. And none of the little machinies were working that they were trying out. And it wasn't moving. And we were standing there and standing there and standing there. And you've all, I'm sure, had this experience, right? You go to the airport and you think you're supposed to be somewhere, right? And this, you're not even moving to get your car. So we're standing there and this couple is at the counter. It's a U shape, right? Where the counters are and we're all funneling in. And they are getting more and more agitated, more and more angry, and just yelling. We needed this car, whatever. They were just yelling and yelling and yelling. And it was uncomfortable. The whole room, it was just, everybody was uncomfortable. And the person behind the desk, your heart was breaking for them, right? So I'm standing there and I'm like, okay, well, what don't we just breathe a little Tonglen here? And so I did the traditional Tonglen, which is there was anger and darkness, and I inhaled it as threads of dark smoke, dark, dark smoke. That's the traditional teaching for Tonglen, is you breathe in dark, smoky, yucky gunk. That is that feeling, right? You breathe it in, but you establish before you even start breathing it. You come right into that heart center, right? This right there in the center behind your sternum, that chakra, and you establish a sense of just, it's calm, you're centered. It's just this, I think of it like this radiant little diamond at the center of a lotus, and that diamond, nothing can tarnish it. And it's so brilliant that anything that comes in contact with it just kind of burns up. And so breathing in this black yucky yucky into this flaming brilliant diamond that burns it up, and I send it back out as compassion and light, white light, white light, right? And this is a little different from the technique we just did. We learned, I don't know if you might not remember it, where we did other people feel this way too. This isn't going to last. Oh, if I could ease their suffering, I wish I would. This is a little different version of that, where you're just breathing in the darkness and then you breathe back out the light, and that light is filled with just compassion and grace. As I'm standing there with my eyes open and I'm just tongueling it. I'm just tongueling it. Now I'm feeling fine now, right? Because I'm breathing tongueling. And I'm sending it to the whole area, the couple and the person behind. And I'm watching and I'm realizing, okay, they have now pissed off everybody. And they're getting louder and louder and angrier and angrier. And the wife is finally realizing, uh-oh, right? She's trying to calm down the husband, but he needs the manager at this point. And so I'm breathing tongueland. The guy behind the counter just kind of leaves to go get the manager. Doesn't come back. You can see everybody in the back going, I'm not going out there. I'm just breathing tongueland. Finally, somebody comes back. The guy is just pissed. The wife is, okay, all right. And there really is nothing they can do. There literally is not a car for them, right? This is not a situation that anybody's trying to fuck them over. They're already fucked over because they don't have any cars for anybody, right? And I'm just breathing tongue Glenn. And the whole thing just quieted. And I don't know what was said. I couldn't hear it, but I know that finally somebody else came over. And it settled. Were they happy when they left? I don't think so. I think they were still disgruntled, but the whole thing just kind of settled. I have no idea if my tongue Glenn helped, but the teaching is that it helped. And what I saw was the anger and that kind of just gently at de-escalate, that's the word, right? And when I finally got to the counter, I happened to have one of the people that they've been yelling at. And I just said something like, wow, you guys did a really good job handling that. That must have been so hard. And the person just was like, oh. They were so grateful that somebody acknowledged how hard it was for them. And they were really nice to me. I can't remember what happened, but I just remember whatever they did was just really sweet. And it's one of those stories that has always stuck with me. Because part of me is going, Karen, you don't have that much power, right? Oh, that's pretty egotistic to think that you have changed that situation. But the teaching is that it made a difference. The teaching is that it makes a difference. And so on the premise that the teaching is correct, let's breathe tongue Glenn for the people in Germany. Which is not to say that the people in our country don't matter, not at all. But it's to say that this is something that's separate enough from us. It's detached enough from us that it's a nice practice point. And what I do want to just remind you as we do this, even as we do this, we are joining people whose purpose is to breathe tongueland for the world. And they are people 24/7. They say up in the Himalayas, in monasteries throughout Asia, here in the United States and Canada, who are round the clock breathing tongueland for all of us. For all of us. I just think that's a beautiful thing. So as we breathe right now, let's enter their stream. Okay. And if you feel strong enough to do this, do it this way. if you don't feel strong enough, then just kind of listen and hear the patterning and see if you can just move into the compassion place. Did that make sense? So I've kind of explained the technique to you, right? What we're going to do is we're going to establish ourselves that there is this diamond, pure, radiant, brilliant, and there is nothing that can damage this diamond. Nothing. Okay? So find your seat in they call it the Vajra. It's so strong and it's so pure. Nothing can touch it. So let's find our seat and come into your heart center in that same place. Let's start with that heart smile like we did at the beginning of class to find our Vajra in the center of our heart. So think of someone who makes your heart smile. Find that feeling. Find that feeling. And then as the breath comes in, have that sense that the breath, as it touches that smiling heart, the breath is caressing it. It's saying hi. It's nurturing. And now let that smile, that feeling of the heart open, the breath touching it and it opening. See if you can let that feeling become strong and stable and brilliant and take the shape of a diamond sitting on a lotus at the center of your heart. And as you breathe the breath in, the breath touches this diamond and it just gets more brilliant, more radiant. Each breath, the diamond radiates its love, its light, its compassion. And so right now, your heart, the feeling is of the heart smiling, but it's so intensely strong and grounded and radiant. Okay. So that's where we start. That's our ground. And we know as we breathe on, if we breathe in and we take away the suffering of others, that we're not breathing it into our heart center. We're breathing it so it can be transmuted by the brilliance and the radiance of the love and the light of this diamond in our heart center. Okay. So always come back to this. If you start to get a little lost, come back to the heart smiling and the diamond. All right. So as we continue to hold this radiance at our heart center, let's let our mind expand to the suffering of those in Germany who have lost their homes to the floods, who have lost loved ones to the floods, who have been hurt, needing assistance, who may still be trapped. And let's use Tonglen to try and ease the suffering of all these beings. And as we breathe in, we imagine their suffering to be this black, hot smoke. And we just breathe it in to take it away from them. And as it touches the heart, it's instantly transformed into white light. And we exhale this white, brilliant light back to all these beautiful souls in Germany. And we're leaning in. We're not afraid of this darkness. We're not afraid of this suffering because we know at the core of our being is something much, much stronger. And so we breathe in with a sense, a sincere desire to ease their suffering. To take away the suffering. And as that dark heat is transmuted, we breathe back with compassion and light-filled compassion surrounding those homes and those people. And sometimes it helps in your visualization to sense that the suffering and the pain as that darkness, whether you're seeing it as houses, individuals, or just devastated landscape. But then as you send the light, the white light, it's as if the darkness eases. And each time you exhale, and send the light, you can sense the light there. And as you breathe in the hot, smoky darkness, each time you do, the houses, the landscape, the people become lighter. It's like you are literally taking it away. And let's do a few more breaths. And your heart is not only filled with this light, but the feeling of compassion. It's just filling your whole heart center and moving through your other chakras. Just you filled with this light of compassion that you are sharing with all the people in Germany who have been affected by this flooding. And let's each do two more breaths. And then after that last exhale, as you send that white light and compassion, let's together say the loving kindness blessing. If you know it, just say it with me. If not, just repeat it after me, each line. And we say, may you be at ease. May you feel safe and protected. May you be happy. May you feel loving kindness. May you be filled with loving kindness. And may you be held in loving kindness, that you may be at peace. And then we send that same blessing now. We close by sending it to all beings. And we say, May all beings be at ease. May they feel safe and protected. May they be happy. May they feel loving kindness. May they be filled with loving kindness. And may they be held in loving kindness, that they may be at peace. And why don't we breathe a few breaths of Hong Sa, each of us, just maybe 4 or 5 Hong Sa, just to rebalance and bring ourselves back into our beings. Okay, so keep going, but I'm going to ask you to be very clear to gaze at the sun center as we breathe Hong Sa in this kind of instance. The sun center is our balanced, most balanced point in our energy body. So as you breathe Hong Sa, have your eyes gazing at the internal sun center. And so let's do a few more breaths together. And then after your last exhale, next exhale, release the technique and once again, just rest for a few moments in the stillness, in the quiet. And before we open our eyes, let's bring our, just ask the question, is my heart still smiling? Can I find my heart smile? And then when you're ready, just take a gentle in-breath. And as you exhale, open your eyes. So any comments or questions about this version of Ten Tonglen that we just did? Yeah, Kelsey.
I just wanted to share that imagery of the diamond was like extremely helpful for me, because that's one of the things I've struggled with this technique is, you know, like logically knowing I'm going to be safe, but then taking it in, I'm like, oh my God, am I okay? Yes. So having that imagery really, really grounded me.
I'm so glad. Yeah. It's the first time I've actually taught it that way. And I think what's allowed me to do that is with all the Tibetan studies I've been doing. And it's just suddenly became clear to me. It's like, wait, why are we talking around it? Why don't we just, the Vajra, it's right there in the heart center, right? I mean, it's, and so, yeah, instead of just having a feeling in there, let's add that imagery. I'm glad. Thank you for that feedback. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you use the same technique for illness as well?
Yes.
Basically just, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead, Brenda. Yeah.
Is there a, like, I was trying to remember because I've done it before, but is there a breathing like in the nose, open the mouth? Like, is it all, does it matter?
At this moment, I'm going to say you're inhaling through the nose. We mm-hmm. almost always inhale through the nose, right? Unless it's a specific pranayama. You could exhale through the mouth if it felt right. If it helped to, you know, inform that sense of sending the light. How many of you were able to easily have that light move back up and out through your nostrils? Or how many of you kind of modified it so that you felt it coming from the heart center as much as the breath?
Well, I tried both ways because I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And it felt better once I had my mouth closed.
Okay. All right. There you
like
go.
I could not control it, but I could manage it a little bit better.
I like the way you said that. Yeah. Kathleen, what were you going to say?
I said when I just, sometimes my mouth is open, sometimes it's closed, but I just use breathing in and I think of this sort of circular motion, right? It's coming in, it's bad, it's clearing, it's cleansing, it's going back out, and then it comes back in. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I have to open my mouth and really just let more of it out. So I don't think it's how you feel, but that circular motion is what helps my visual. But the diamond too was very, because like you, Kelsey, I was struggling with the black in the coming in, right? I'm always all about light. But so I like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ramon, what were you going to share? Oh, I thought you had something. Okay. All right. So this version of Tonglen is really, really useful when, I mean, I know in the mom's class, the moms use it with their kids. Breathe Tonglen for your kids. You breathe Tonglen for somebody who's sick, somebody who's dying, somebody, you know, people who are suffering from somebody. This is Tonglen you breathe for other people. For other people. And I think one of the things I love about Tonglen is it's on some level, and when we're a little further down the road and you're going to find, we'll talk about this, but you're going to find that there is some basic patterning with the breath that is really tied with this idea of reciprocity. The trees are giving off the oxygen that we breathe in. And, you know, say it, life is, we're breathing in oxygen that is brought to us by life, and we give back carbon dioxide that is breathed in by life to give us back the oxygen. There is this, like Kathleen said, there's this circular, and the idea is it's reciprocity. Reciprocity. Everything is given and exchanged, and it's freely given and it's freely exchanged, which is one of the reasons this idea of resistance and attachment are anathema. It's like, that's what we have to let go of, because it's free. Give and take. Give and take. All of life. And if we're going to be in the flow of life, it's a freely given, freely received. It's, we're in a flow. That's the flow. Ramon, yeah.
Yeah, because of my Catholic background, I have to ask the question. Uh-huh. Is any part of Tonglen, are you keeping any of that darkness that you're breathing in at any point? Or are you kind of literally just transforming it, transfixing it, and sending it back out?
Yeah. But we don't keep any of it. None of it. Not one set, not one piece. And I'll tell you why. I don't know that I've told this story before. Bill was having a really, really bad time. And I was, and I knew Tonglen. I mean, Tonglen was a technique I did, but I thought I'm going to just pull this off of him. I'm going to pull it off of him. And I remember we were up in Seattle and I can't remember. I think we were meeting a kid's boyfriend or something like that. One of our kids, you know, I don't remember. Anyway, it was this odd hotel room and he was in a really hard place. And I'll just breathe Tonglen. And I thought I would just breathe it off of him, right? That Catholic part of me, let me remove your suffering, right? And I'll take it on. I got physically sick. I got physically ill from doing that. And that's what taught me they really mean it, is Tonglen, when they say there's a little transformer right here that is shifting it. It's not us doing it. It's not us doing it. It's almost like we're an instrument that life is using in that moment to help move energy and shift energy. And I was so ill. I was so ill. It was a huge lesson to me. Huge lesson. So yeah, I'm glad you asked the question. Yeah.
It makes me think too that we then also have to be cautious about our intentions for doing it and not having an attachment to an outcome.
Yeah. Exactly. Well said, Brenda. Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm so glad y'all are in this class here because it's like, I can't always remember everything that needs to be said, but inevitably one of you will say something and it's like, yeah, that's really important what she just said. We breathe Tonglen without attachment, you know, and we trust. This is what they call, this is what Kriyananda would call working on the inner planes. And this is what they say that they're, the caves of the Himalayas are filled with monks and yogis who are breathing and meditating for all of us. And this is that, I think I told this group already the story, Carolyn Mace's story of the accident, right? I've already told you that story. Oh, okay. I'll tell you in a second then. It's this idea that there is power to our thoughts and to what we can do inside. There is power to making chicken soup and taking to somebody who's sick. Absolutely. But certainly when you have teachers and gurus who aren't with their disciples, so all over the world, what Kriyananda did, he said he helped on the inner planes and he trained us, and you are now training also. We help on the inner planes. And what this means is that we know that the energy of all of this world starts with prana. It starts with a thought. It is the energy behind it all. It's nothing we can touch or feel or grab onto. And that energy, this is where you enter into we're in alignment with quantum theory and all of this studying they're doing with energy. In the world of meditation, and this is one of the concepts I wanted to share with you today. And so I'll get to the story. I will not forget to tell you the story. Somebody remind me. We call it the precipitation of matter, which means that what we see here as physical Started is energy. Started is a vibration. And it gets denser and denser and denser and denser until it takes physical form. And we give a name to this by saying there is the causal realm of energy. There's the subtle realm of energy, which is also called the astral realm. And then it takes physical form. Now, this is the yogic terminology. The Buddhists have the same concept. They just use different words for it. Okay? So we're going to stick with the yogic patterning here just for consistency, but know that this isn't unique to yoga. In the shamanistic traditions, same thing. And in Kriya, we call it the precipitation of matter, which simply means it starts as, think of a clear sky. It's a clear sky, nothing there. And then we can't even see it, but little, let's call them little thoughts and things are starting to gather together. And before you know it, oh, there's a cloud. Where did that cloud come from? It's a bunch of vibrations and thoughts that have been attracted to each other and have collected together. And as you get more and more and more and more and more and more, it gets so dense, it rains. And rain comes on down as water. It's taken form. And so everything that we experience here has a prior cause. A prior cause. And when we talk about working on the inner planes, we talk about moving from this physical world, boom, 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 into that realm, the subtle realm of not just thought. We're talking about the energy, the deeper, deeper thought patternings beyond conscious thought. We're talking about deep, deep forces, energetic forces that have shaped what we see here, what we are experiencing here. And so we, when we do Tonglen, when we pray, when we send healing thoughts, we are helping on the inner planes. We are helping on the inner planes. And there's two rules to helping on the inner plane. One is you do not have the right ever, ever, unless someone has specifically given you permission, which is a guru-disciple relationship where the disciple gives the guru permission to come into their energy body and work with them. You do not have the right to send your thoughts or your energy into another person's energy body unless you have their permission. Okay? You send your thoughts and you send it. The way Kriyananda would say it is, let's say this is a person I'm trying to send my little heal. This is our goose, right? I'm sending my thoughts. And in my old mind, I thought, oh, I was sending it. And I was filling their whole body with my thoughts to heal them. And it's like, You send it here. You send it around them. You send it. So it's just right there in their subtle energy field. So as soon as they have the thought, wanting the strength, wanting the blessing, wanting the help, it's right there for them. It's right there for them. But we don't have the right to go in there and mess with someone's energy without their permission. Okay, Kathleen, I can see it.
I use image because I know some people like images, but either surrounding them, like, I don't want to say a tornado because that's not, but just cocooning them either in that light with those thoughts or sprinkling pixie dust into their field, into their energy field.
Yeah. And whatever visual you use, I like Kriyananda's words were place it by their aura. Right. However that is visual for, and I think, you know, Kathleen's point, visualizations are really helpful. They're just really, really helpful, you know?
And the other thing I always say is, you know, whatever is for their higher good. This, again, what Brenda said before, you know, it's not, I have no agenda except to wish them well.
Oh, this is the moment for that prayer. Okay. I wasn't sure where in the class we were going to do this. So I will send to everybody, write it down, Karen. I have nothing to write with because my office is, would somebody text me, remind me to give this to Darcy to put up on your handouts for you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is the prayer according to Kriyananda along the lines of what Kathleen and Brenda were saying. It's very simple. And I recommend, in fact, if I was going to have a test, an exam at the end, this would be the only thing. No, there'd be two things on it that I would ask you to, I would want you to have memorized. This prayer and the loving kindness blessing, and any version of the loving kindness blessing. Doesn't have to be mine. Could be anybody's. And by the way, the one I give you isn't mine. It's from Stephen Levine. So it's this prayer. Memorize it. It will be of use to you for the rest of your life. Goes like this. O infinite Lord of life, you know far better than I that which my beloved Natalie needs. It is for this and this alone that I meditate. It is for this and this alone that I pray. I ask that you bring it to her swiftly, surely, and most, most harmoniously. That's our prayer. That's our prayer. And it does everything we just said. It's, you know, it's like Kathleen said. It's like, I don't know what's best for that person. And for us to think we do is really, you know, it's really hard for a parent to hear that, but it's like, we really do not know what is best for that child, right? We don't know what is best for our spouse. We don't know. And so this prayer takes care of that. It's like, you know better. An infinite Lord of life is this beautiful, nebulous phrase that you can translate however you want, you know? It's so. And then while we're at it, let me just add this one other thing because it's kind of along the same lines. And these are these random things that you never know where to put it into the training, but here's where it's coming. Kriyananda was also really clear, and his guru, Shelley G, said this, that we do not have the right to interfere with someone else's dream, even if it appears to us to be a nightmare. Let me say it again. We do not have the right to interfere with anyone else's dream, even if it appears to us to be a nightmare. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Should I say one more time? People still writing? You got it? Okay. Yeah. And that little piece of wisdom, you know, it's like all of these are about recognizing the autonomy of every soul, every being on the planet. They have come with their karma. And they are here to work out their karma. And they are the only ones who know their karma. Lisa, what were you going to say?
And if it's someone's on a path, if they're going to hurt themselves or they're going to hurt someone else, I'm not supposed to intervene. I'm not supposed to like say, maybe you should reach out and call this number.
I think say reach out and call that number is very, very different from you are doing the wrong thing. You need to get your shit together. You need to go to college. You need to divorce that asshole.
Okay.
Those are not helpful comments. Those are interfering. Interfering is meddling. Giving somebody a resource, handing them a card, that may be exactly what's needed. So that's our discernment. You know, this path is not black and white. It's discernment. I mean, that's a huge word, discernment. And as we move into the central channel, as you start balancing the right and the left parts of your being, you get more clarity and you develop what we call skillful means. Skillful means means knowing when to say something and when to not say something, when to do something, when to not do something, when to, like I do so often in here, shut my mouth, don't say it, Karen, right? It's like skillful means is the discernment for how to use these teachings so that you honor another person's path. And at the same time, you are there as a beneficial presence when needed. It's not black and white. It's not black and white. And that's why we need to be balanced, because the discernment is, sometimes that discernment is absolutely nothing rational. It's a gut feeling, right? It's a gut sensing. Brenda.
So sorry, you're a black and white thinker over here. You said that there were two rules. and we got the no right to send your thoughts. Was the
interfering dream interfering? Yeah, was the second
one. It's the second one. Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That moment right now, I just had a moment. Oh my God. All right. Not that I ever judged Kriyananda or anything, but going to his retreats was really challenging, because he'd say there's six things and my little six brain wanting to know them all. I'd start writing and then there'd be like, I have eight and I'd go, okay, what were the six? Or I'd have three and he'd set six and I'm sitting there going, what did I miss? And I realized just now he probably just made it up. It's like it's like he said there were two things and then he went off and they were woven in there somewhere. I knew the two things I wanted to say, but I totally forgot about the list I was giving you. Right. And I got there. And I told you about the prayer, you know, and all these other things. And I suddenly got this, oh, he was teaching in the moment. And the list was not important, you know. Although that one was a good one. That was only two things. And you got them.
In fact, I had a one and a two on my paper. And I'm like, oh, this sounds like number two. And so I wrote it in there.
I want to go back to all my notes with him now and go, okay, oh no, that was number two. That was number three. He was just still telling a story, but he was covering his points. So yeah. So, okay. So all from Tom Glenn, look what we just did. We just did. So can we take a few moments to just think through now when you're doing Tom Glenn for yourself, when you're doing it for other people? And see if we can just bring a little clarity. I mean, Tom Glenn, there's lots of versions out there. There's lots of versions. And we don't ever want to be the one going, well, that's not how you do Tom Glenn. Maybe that's how somebody else does it, right? So I think there's one variation on the doing it for yourself that we'll get to. I'm not sure if today is the right time. But so when you're doing it for yourself, right, the first place, the most important thing is to remember this concept that we are doing the opposite of what our instinct says. Our instinct is to resist the hurt, to resist the pain, to resist the confusion. And Tonglen is about, oh, lean into it. Lean into it. Feel it completely. Embrace it. In other words, breathe it in fully. Just breathe it in. But then as we do that, we recognize this most important thought. Other people feel this way too. And this is the key piece right here, because at that moment, what was so separate and isolating for us becomes a place where we rejoin humanity. There is nothing wrong with us. Other people feel this too. whether it's jealousy. And these are the ones we tend to use Tonglen for, right? Is incredible shame or jealousy or deep, deep hurt from betrayal or, I've used it for anger, but the anger is usually because it's the protection from a deeper sense of betrayal or shame or whatever the hurt may be, right? So when we have that moment where we can literally accept that other people feel this way too, oh, there's nothing wrong with me. I mean, and all of you, I think, can grasp how important that is, right? There's nothing wrong with me. Other people feel this way too. I'm not alone. Those are the three things that first, other people feel this way too. I'm not alone. There's nothing wrong with me. That's all carried with that one phrase, other people feel this way too. And we breathe into that and that opens something up. And then we're feeling this feeling and it's intense and we calm ourselves to give ourselves the strength to continue to do this by saying, and this will pass. We remember this key principle in meditation land that we are training ourselves to understand and accept, which is that everything changes. Nothing is permanent. And it's a toughie, right? It's a toughie because the culture around you acts as if everything is permanent and forever. And it's not. So you're bucking the tide here, but you're learning this truth. And if you're not convinced of this truth, then part of your training, and this is a training you can do during your day, is to start training yourself to recognize nothing lasts forever. Everything is going to change. And your wisdom is going to come from knowing that everything is going to change. Your cute, sweet little 5-year-old is going to become a really obnoxious 20-year-old. It's going to happen. And there's nothing wrong when that happens, right? That pet that you love so much is going to die. They are not going to be here forever. And even harder, those people you love so much, they're going to die also. And you are going to die also. The job you love so much, in a, like that, could be over. Could be done. So like Kathleen said with that fire, like that, everything changed. Everything changed. Fire, was it 1/2 mile away, Kathleen?
Yeah, it turned out it was 1/4 mile.
Quarter mile.
Yeah, so I'm glad I didn't know that, but yeah, it was 1/4 mile. And then yeah, they dosed it with, I think, 3 helicopters and buckets. So.
And just like that, the recognition, I don't know how much she shared with you, but that everything she had could have been gone.
Yeah.
Right? And this is where all our training in equanimity. Ah, so. I just lost everything I owned. Ah, so. Well, it takes, we train and we train and we train and we train, but we can get there. Right? Yeah. So, impermanence. I was supposed to be in Dallas this weekend. My uncle, my dear, dear uncle, that we just have such a connection. And I just found out that he'd been planning a special dinner for us to have, on Saturday night. Well, last night, he fell, he had a stroke. And so he's in ICU with a deep bleed in his brain and nobody knows at this point. I mean, it looks like he's probably going to come out of it, but he's going to need a lot of rehab. And so the whole plan for gone, boom, just like that, in one fall, done. All the plans, everything, right? And my sweet cousin who lost her 14-year-old daughter 6 years ago, septicemia, in one weekend. Her daughter went from a vibrant young 14-year-old to having to pull the plugs. 6 years later, her mom dies, and 6 months later, her dad is in ICU again. It's been a rough road, right? And this is the nature of life, though. And our wisdom is in leaning into it and embracing it and not resisting it. Not resisting it. And it's not an overnight wisdom. It's a step by step using these techniques, using your experiences to bring you balance so that little by little you are balanced enough and wise enough to see life as it is without running away, without running away. Maybe on some level that's our goal, isn't it? To be able to just see life as it is without running away. Open-hearted, feeling the vast whooms of emotions and still just show up. Just show up. Full-hearted. 100% in the game, you know? So step one, that's all step one of Tom Glenn. Yeah, Brenda.
I'll just share really quickly. It's random, but we just watched a movie last night on Netflix. It's called Penguin Bloom. It's new and it's like everything you're talking about. So it doesn't fold in meditation at all, but it's about a woman who faces a tragedy and then how things change. And it's a really, really good movie. It's Australian and it's just fun to listen to and watch. And so
Penguin Bloom, B-L-O-O-M.
It's based on a true story, but yeah, I watched it with my 14-year-old and we were both just, first we were like, it's not so great. And then it just really, really grabs you in. So anyway.
There you go. Thank you, Brenda. Okay. So step two, this will pass. Step one, other people feel this way too. Step two, this will pass. Step three, I really, really wish they didn't have to suffer like this. I know how this feels. If I could take this away from them, I would. If I could do this, this is a little more in line with what Ramon was saying yesterday that those of us who are raised Catholic might have. But it is, it's a sincere wish that if I would rather have to do this suffering than have anybody else feel it. So if I could take this suffering and if I could feel this and nobody else ever have to, oh, I love everybody enough that I would want to do this. Now that is an error thought on some level. Let's be clear that we will get to at another time, but the spirit of the thought is compassion and caring and wanting to ease the suffering of our fellow beings. And as soon as that spark of, it's like other people feel this way too, it opens. There's nothing wrong with me. I can be here right now. I can be fully present. Step two, this will pass. That's the stability to let me continue through the technique. Step three, that open-hearted compassion. We've stepped into that place of compassion. It's that compassion that is behind that feeling of, I wish they didn't have to feel this. Wish no one had to feel this. This sucks. I wish that feeling of compassion now, as we send it out, that feeling of compassion actually begins to fill us. It's back to the principle of the bell is loudest, right? In here, as I'm sending the compassion out to all the rest of the room.
Oh, that's loud.
It's really loud right here. That's where it's the loudest. Right. And so what Tom Glenn does, it helps on so many levels, but ultimately this type of compassion of Tom Glenn is what fills us with compassion. And now instead of anger, shame, jealousy, fear, hurt, we are now filled with compassion. And that compassion for ourselves is part of this whole journey to becoming integrated. All of the parts of us coming together. Not resisting these separate parts of ourselves, but embracing them, feeling compassion for them. Do you see how beautifully woven this technique is? Mm-hmm. It's profound. It's profound. And then when we do it for others, like we did today, then we go back to that, the real traditional breathing in, but it's transmuted because this light, this is the truth, right? This is the, in Buddhism, they call it the adamantine diamond because nothing can cut it. It is, what is the word I'm looking for? It's like a truth that cannot be shaken, that can, it is the ultimate truth. And that radiates and we can send back the blessing, the light to ease the suffering.
What kind of diamond did you say again, Karen?
The word they use is adamantine, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. It's A-D-A-M-A-N-T-I-N-E.
Okay.
The points to the person who looks it up on Google and finds what it means. I'm serious.
Okay.
There goes Kelsey. There goes our millennial. There she goes. Oh, Kathleen's going too. Oh, Ramon. Somebody's going to get it first. Oh, you don't? Okay. Yeah, I'm curious to see what is the definition. Yeah. What does it say, Kelsey?
I don't know. I just wrote it down to check later.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. So there is one slight variation on this that we'll do next week that we can do for ourselves. It's the same. It's a lovely, lovely version for us and to do, but I think this is plenty for today. And, any questions or thoughts? It was a little, might have seemed a little random, but down the road, you'll see how it's all connected. Yes, Kelsey.
Well, it's not a question or thought, but when we had our one-on-one, you asked me to share an experience that happened with me over our break.
Yes.
Share it with the group. The background story is that we went to Chicago for a wedding a couple weeks ago, and it was totally overwhelming. Like, I didn't know anybody, and it was maskless post-COVID, and so just very anxiety-inducing. And I was having a really hard time of it. And I was like, you know, trying to be on the dance floor, but I just had this feeling in my heart. And I was like, oh God, I can't pretend to just be happy right now. And I needed some help. I felt very alone. So I asked my husband to like step out and just be with me for a minute while I, you know, I had to let the tears out and be there for myself and to know that I wasn't alone in the world. But that feeling stuck with me afterwards. Like, I could make it through the moment and I was fine, but there was still some seed there. And it wasn't until days later I came home and, like, you know, after a couple of days of sitting with it, I came home and I sat down, and when I was actually able to be there for myself is when I felt it fully release. And so I don't know, I just wanted to share that sometimes it's okay to like need help on the path, but also like being there for myself was what really helped me release the energy. So I just wanted to share that experience.
Could you say just a little bit more about how you were there for yourself? I mean, how did you be there for yourself at that point?
It was a lot of just acknowledgement of the reality. Like, this is really hard. Oh gosh, this is so scary. Like, of course you would feel that way. Of course you would feel like uncertain of everybody's reactions to you. Of course you would feel overwhelmed. And it was really beautiful. Like, before I had been kind of caught up in the drama of everything, but once I was able to be there for myself, I felt so much compassion for everybody else. It's like, oh, you know, they were probably going through their own things and they had their own stress. And so it was just really beautiful when I could be there for me. I could actually be there for other people too.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelsey. And thanks for remembering to share that, because I mean, that's ultimately, it's for each of us to be there for ourselves. And what Kelsey experienced was the, how good it feels when you have that moment where you're actually there and you're the one you need and you show up for you. And don't underestimate how much we're bucking the trend, because your whole life long, you have been told that you need other people to validate you, to complete you. You complete me, right? I mean, it's like that's the story. And to suddenly go, oh, whoa, wait a minute. It's me who needs to show up for me? It's kind of like, how come nobody ever told me that? I'm spending all these years doing this fairy tale type of life, you know? So no, it's not your parents' job. It's not your, it's your job. It's your job. And maybe that isn't really possible until we're older like this and we know more than we did when we were in elementary school and high school. You know what I mean? So. Anything else?
You are going to tell us a story.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I was going to tell you the story of Carolyn Mace. This is a true story. And if you have never listened to Carolyn Mace, go to Sounds True and find something of hers and listen to her. She's got a sense of humor. She's way softer now. Back in the day, she was pretty tough. She was a Catholic nun, Ramon, and then she, in Chicago, no less, I think. And then she's a medical intuitive anyway, her story is phenomenal. She's no longer a nun, but this is a true story. She was giving a retreat or a lecture in England. And this woman came up to her and told her this story. She was in a traffic accident and all the traffic around, you know, and those are the smaller roads, right? Everybody was jammed up and clogged and congested. And she had left her body and she was hovering up over the car. And all the energy she was feeling was, God damn, who's da da da? What's going on here? I'm going to be late. Rah, rah. It was just rah, 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 rah. Everybody's so pissed off. And out of this one spot, this light came. This light came up and the light was, oh, I hope the person's okay. I hope whoever it is that they're going to be okay. May the help get there quickly. May they be tended. It was just positive, positive. And she went down and she memorized the license plate of the car and managed to bring it back with her as she was revived. And she told Carolyn Mace that she then looked up the identity of the person whose car it was. And she went to see them to thank them because that the inner plane, the light, the energy made a difference for her. And it helped her to withstand the onslaught of the thought bombs coming at her from everybody else who was pissed off at having been inconvenienced. So this is what we mean, helping on the inner planes. And when Kriyananda told that, I remember this story and I'm like, you know what? There's something to this. Our thoughts, we can help on the inner planes. We can help on the inner planes. So thank you. Thank you, Agnieszka. Now I think we've tied up our circle. All right. All right, loves. Well, I don't have any homework for you this week, except to say, if you want to start browsing through the very first part of spiritual science, browsing through the Yamas Niyamas, his explanations are beautiful. They're not dense and just kind of browse through that a little bit, and we won't start up homework stuff until next week. I think everybody needs a week to kind of, okay. All right.
I won't be here next week because I'm camping, but it's the only one I'm missing.
All right. Okay. And Agnieszka?
Where can we find the blessing meditation that you're using written down?
Which one? Oh, infinite Lord of life?
No.
The blessing. Loving kindness blessing?
Yes.
Yes. I will have Darcy, that will be posted on your page for you. I'll have her post that. And I'm going to have her post, just a graphic of the 8 limbs of Patanjali that we will break down over the weeks ahead. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. One question. because I read different books, but I remember you guys talking about, I want to order the autobiography of a yogi, but you guys, wasn't there two different books and to order which one?
Yes, order the blue one, because the orange cover was published by Self-Realization Fellowship and they're marketing themselves throughout the whole book.
Oh.
The blue cover, as some of you saw, has the inscription to his disciple named Kriyananda, who is different from our Kriyananda. Okay. My guru is Goswami Kriyananda, and Donald J. Walters is a Kriyananda who was also a disciple of Yogananda's. A little confusing, but he is the founder of the Ananda organization. Okay. Ananda is a worldwide fellowship also. And what he did was he brought back the original book before it became a marketing tool for SRF. And all of that stuff is in it. And that's why the inscription is in the front, because it was the inscription for him. So the blue one is, now the orange one is great too, but there's just a lot of SRF. Okay. Oh, come to SRF for our home study courses and stuff like that, which are great. I've done them, but I think the blue copy is a little,
sure.
Okay. Bye, Lisa. Okay. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Okay. Bye.